Our speaker today is Reverend Jennifer Dalton. She was born and raised in the mountains of Virginia. Spiritually, she was raised Mormon and Southern Baptist. That's quite a mixture. She spent 4 years as an aircraft technician in the United States Air Force before completing her bachelor's degree in political science, and many years later, her Master's of Divinity degree from Emory's Candler School of Theology. She is currently ordained and recognized by the Alliance of Baptists and considers herself a Unitarian Universalist Baptist. She has been married for 19 years. She has 3 children, ages 23, 19, and 17. They all live with 3 dogs and many cats. And I said, how many is that? And she said, 5 or 6. I guess you lost count. Jennifer is currently working at Atlanta Medical Center as a patient advocate. And she's going to speak to us today. Her title is Coming Home.
Morning. If you want to hear my southern accent, you can do one of 2 things. The first is easy. You can ply me with a couple of glasses of whiskey. After about the second glass, my Virginia twang becomes pronounced and unmistakable. The other thing you can do is ask me where I'm from. If I begin to talk about that tiny town in the mountains of Virginia, and I begin to tell you the stories of the people I was raised with, my accent creeps slowly back in, like the way the kudzu eases up the hills I grew up in. Without realizing it, the stories of my drunken, crazy uncles and the trouble I got into with my cousins will lead me back down dirt roads, bringing those Appalachian tones back into my voice. What is interesting to me is it doesn't happen when I talk about the mountains or the scenery. Doesn't happen when I talk about the churches I grew up in. It doesn't happen when I speak about our culture. It only happens when I start to speak about the people. It's my Uncle Junior that made whiskey and much later hid his crops of marijuana on the back acres of my granddaddy's farm. It's Uncle Pete, who was mean as a rattlesnake and ran moonshine back in the day. Grandma Simpson scaring little children for fun, and on at least one occasion, after the strokes, cussing a stranger for buying all the Dr. Pepper that was on sale at the local Kmart. It's Granny Dalton's homemade soup. It's Daddy's 20 foxhounds and the story of how he got his GED at 62. The place I called my first home doesn't exist on a map. It exists in the hearts of my people. As an adult, many places have been home, and no place has been home. I've lived in several states, spent most of my life here in Atlanta, but I cannot say Atlanta is home exactly. Atlanta is my city, and I love it. But when I was in the deserts of New Mexico, at the age of 23, I met a boy. He was 3 years younger than me, and he had a lot less living under his belt at that time than I did. He was the handsomest boy I had ever seen. He was dressed all in black, with a black leather jacket, black hair all the way down his back. It didn't take long before I fell in love with him. A few adventures and misadventures later, that young man and I moved in together and made a home in a tiny trailer in the mountains of Virginia with my 2-year-old little girl. And 21 years later, I will tell you that he is my home. Wherever he is home. As my child put it succinctly, home is simply where your heart lives. But our hearts are funny things. Our hearts can live in so many places. They exist in the places we grew up, the places we've spent our lives, and more importantly, with the people we spend our lives with. those places and those people become our homes. And for many of us, we are blessed to say we have homes, plural. Homes are the places we go that we can fully be who we are, with no apologies. They are the places and the people that make us feel safe, welcome, and accepted. For many of us, church becomes a home. We actually use the language frequently. We talk about our home church and or our church home. In the Black church tradition, they celebrate homecoming, a tradition that brings back members that have moved away and gathers the entire congregation in what from the outside resembles a family reunion. UU celebrate ingathering, which not only marks the end of summer, but is also a time to celebrate everyone's summer travels and their safe return home. With all of this talk about being a church home, we also need to talk about what it means to be home, and more importantly, how we practice hospitality. We, the people of the church, are what make the church a home. If the church is a place where we feel safe, accepted for who we are, it is because we, the people, are loving and accepting of one another. If the church is a safe place, it is because we make it so every time we walk in the doors. But how well do we extend our home to others? Because if we were blessed to find a home, wouldn't it make sense that we would want to share that blessing with others? How well do we practice the ancient call of hospitality, the call that comes with the blessing of having a home? My favorite Greek myth is an ancient hospitality tale. It is a story of Bacchus and Philemon. Now, they were a poor old couple, deeply in love. And one day, out of nowhere, two travelers appeared at their door, and they welcomed them in. And chaos ensues. You have elderly people chasing their last goose around the backyard to kill it. And they're serving wine that tastes like something a little bit closer to vinegar. Now, halfway through dinner, the wine becomes empty, and they go to grab it, and it's magically full. And right then, they knew they were in trouble. They knew they were entertaining gods. Now, as you can imagine, more chaos ensues and lots of apologies for the poor fare, even though that poor fare was the best they had to offer. And lots of please don't smite us, because gods tended to do a lot of smiting. And of course, because this is a happy ending story, sort of, the gods do not smite Bacchus and Philemon. Now, because it is an ancient mythology, they do, in fact, smite every single person that they went to their house who did not offer hospitality. But Bacchus and Philemon are rewarded, and they live happily ever after until they are granted their final wish, which is to die peacefully at the same moment in each other's arms. Every mythology I've studied has a hospitality tale similar to Bacchus and Philemon. Our ancestors believed that the travelers that showed up to their door could be gods in disguise, or angels, and they passed the importance of how to treat the stranger on to their children throughout their culture through these stories. In the Hebrew scriptures in Leviticus 19, verses 33 through 34, God commands the Israelites, "When I was a stranger, when a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. You shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as a native among you, and you shall love him as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God." In the New Testament, in Hebrews 13:2, Paul admonishes, "Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some of us have entertained angels unaware." Hospitality has become an antiquated ideal in today's society. We live very separate lives from our neighbors, and some people go decades without ever getting to know the person that lives in the house next door. We no longer welcome the stranger. As a matter of fact, we purchase expensive alarm systems to keep the stranger away. We often go days or even weeks without a knock at the door. And when the knock comes, it's Jehovah's Witnesses. And y'all know most of us here today are not, in fact, inviting them in. The idea that we can show up at someone's door and ask for hospitality, ask to be welcomed into their home and cared for, has long disappeared from today's culture. But the church is not called to be a part of popular culture. And while individual homes may have become the places where we hide from the outside world, our church home is called to be a different thing entirely. Almost every church I have ever attended issues a welcoming statement from the pulpit, a warm welcome from the congregation, and extending a hand to visitors. But I have been to churches where the welcome from the pulpit was absolutely the only welcome I received. As a guest preacher, I've stood in a room full of people for long periods of time with no acknowledgement of my presence as a guest or a new person. And I have privilege. This has happened to me. And I'm a white female who appears at least to be middle class. I can only help but wonder how that same congregation would welcome someone who didn't fit in statistically. What if I were a young African-American male, a homeless person? What if, as I did in my younger years, I appeared with facial piercings and green hair? What if I came in and breastfed my young child? What if I came in wearing a ball cap that said, "Make America Great Again"? How welcoming can we claim to be if we don't practice basic hospitality? I once listened for weeks as a church argued about whether it would be a sanctuary or a beacon. They were working on this as a visioning exercise for the church's future goals. A sanctuary would mean that they focus inward, only on creating a safe, nurturing environment for those who attended the church. A beacon meant they would focus on social justice work, focus on allowing their light to shine and letting the world know about their radical faith. That conversation left me sad and frustrated. It left me sad because there were a lot of people there who argued that the only focus of the church should be maintaining the current environment for those who attended the church. It left me sad because they thought they had a choice. Now, if you believe you're a part of a faith that is life-changing, world-changing, if you believe this is a faith, and I actually stole this part from the UUA website, if you believe this is a faith characterized by brave, curious, and compassionate thinkers and doers, if you believe your faith creates spirituality and community beyond boundaries, working for more justice and more love in our own lives and the world, if you believe that, how could you not want to share that with the world and invite them through those doors to your home? And it left me sad because they believed it had to be a choice. There is no choice between being a sanctuary and a beacon. The place you create every time you gather here at Mountain Light is a home. And it is a place of peace and sanctuary in what I find to be a chaotic world. Consciously reaching out to the community around you does not make you less of a sanctuary. While some travelers may arrive at the doors of your home unexpected, others are waiting for an invitation. And that invitation may be that you ask a friend to come to church with you on Sunday morning. But it might just require more work than that. Every time you march in gay pride, every protest you participate in, every social justice project you engage in as a faith community, every donation you make to Planned Parenthood or Boy Scouts of America, all of it is another way you invite the community through the doors of your home. It's another opportunity to let them know you're here. Y'all have heard me preach quite a bit And I know you've heard me say, probably too often, that we live in a broken world. We live in a world where racism, sexism, ableism, homophobia, and transphobia are very real. Firearms are the second leading cause of death for children and teens in our country. We live in a country where immigrants have traveled to and been welcomed for hundreds of years. And now we lock children in cages at the border. So often I tell you that the only solution is for people like you to raise your voices, to get involved, to do the work your faith professes you do. I tell you this because I believe it. I believe that people like you and the work you do is the only hope our nation has. But the work isn't just about addressing all the broken places in the world. It has another powerful purpose. The work you do lets people know y'all are here. Through that work, the sweat, the tears, you've created a sanctuary, a home here in the Georgia mountains. And it invites people through those doors. What I found when I walked through those doors was a place that would eventually become a home for me. What I found were people who have been fighting for social justice and doing the right things in this world, some before I was even born. A few of you actually marched and fought for the rights I enjoy as a woman in this world when I was still an infant. I walked through these doors and I found people who were brave, curious, and compassionate. I found a place where I felt home. My hope for you is that you will continue reaching out into the community, that you will continue doing the work that matters and opening your doors and inviting the world outside, the disenfranchised, the people who haven't found a church home, and you invite them through those doors if they can have a place of sanctuary and a place to invite others to as well. Amen, shalom, and blessed be.
Are there any comments or questions? Yes. Let me get this way.
Strange kind of theme was going through my mind. When you talked about home, I was thinking of my grandparents and how sometimes in my own head that makes me feel at home. Mm-hmm. I didn't live with them, but we visited them frequently. And then you brought up the end immigrants. And it struck me. Because this is a funny little aside. My sister did her DNA, and I said, well, you don't really have to. You know, all your four grandparents came from Eastern Europe. They're Ashkenazic Jews. And that's what came up. It's easy to know what I am. I'm an Eastern European Ashkenazic Jew. And then you brought up the immigration. If the doors weren't open in the early part of the 20th century for Jews to come in, I wouldn't be here. So the immigration thing that we're going through to keep people out of it, it makes America, to me, feel like it's not home. It has to be, our home has to be where we accept people. That's America.
I think our home has to be the place we show hospitality.
Unlearning and relearning. the door that they knocked on. I know the sound of that door slamming very well. But just plant a seed in someone's mind and show them love. People come out. And that has all to do with what you said.
Anyone else? Comment or question?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Elaborating on Carl, my family also left Russia in about 1900, and it was great to find the boats which they came on the internet. But the main thing I wanted to share is when my father passed, I found his father's exit visa, and it said just what you said. He was not allowed to travel through communities to leave Russia that weren't Jewish. So I had that translated, and I'm going to save it for my grandkids. You could only travel through areas that were Jewish to leave Russia. It's amazing.
Wow. Anyone else? Well, thank you, Reverend Dalton.